This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Whatley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to have back in studio our friend Paul Dowding. Water Pros, 303-862-5554. You can check them out at waterpros.net. Hey, we all need water. Paul, how are you?
Hey, good morning or good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, man, good to see you again. How's business been?
We're grateful, you know. Yeah. We're keeping busy, and I'm just very fortunate, and you know, especially in today's time. So,
no doubt.
We're doing really, really well.
Good deal. All right, we're going to try to focus on some different topics when Paul is in. A lot to talk about with water. And kind of, Paul, we were just discussing here before we came on air here. I heard recently that about 83% of our water here in our state comes from snowmelt. It would not take long for us to be in trouble, would it?
No, not at all. And I think, if you watch the news, a lot of our reservoirs are low, but it's because our water needs are higher based upon the growth in our community. Mm-hmm. So you have to realize if you have multiple agencies drawing from the same water source and they're dumping it back in, right, then technically it's reusable water.
Wow.
So, you know, it's something that we really need to, you know, ask the water district, you know, and ask questions, where's my water come from?
Mm-hmm. We may not want to know.
The folks that live in town and you pay for your water, you know, you have a right to get the water report. And so you can, you know, be proactive. You know, I'm sure they're supposed to post it online, go to the website and read and see what, you know, what kind of contaminants are there.
Right. We're going to help out the folks today a little bit more, probably. Talk about well water for a little bit. Hey, a lot of people in Colorado have well water. So kind of just maybe talk about the initial differences of difference from city into well and issues that y'all get into.
So there's a lot of folks that are, you know, buying homes and moving to the rural areas, out east especially, right? A lot of growth out there, right? In Kingsburg, Kiowa, you know, Watkins, Bennett. And so when you get well water, you know, people expect moving from town, you know, the water to be, you know, clean, pristine, and that's just not the case. And so, you know, there's issues of hardness, acidity, and iron content. It's called ferrous iron or clear water iron, and that's what stains your clothes and causes, you know, water to have, you know, a taste or odor issue. And so we, you know, we focus on helping, you know, people with those kind of problems. And realtors, we're also finding, and we recommend realtors and to also, you know, point out, you know, get the water tested, because you don't want folks to have, you know, become disappointed to have an unexpected issue. And then they're saying, hey, you know, you didn't disclose this problem to me. And so it's something that 10 years ago, you know, it wasn't really an issue. But in today's world, there's an expectation. And so, you know, well water issues are something that, you know, especially new homeowners who've never had to experience what well water can be, you know, it's something that you really need to pay attention to. And so we specialize also in fixing well water issues. You know, when you're in a well, you have your own pump, right? Well pump, right? You have a pressure tank that kind of helps that issue. A pressure tank designed for you to basically, you know, get up and use a little bit of water. Well, you've got water in that holding tank, right? Also helping providing pressure, but also providing, you know, the water so the pump always has to kick on and run. And then from that point, when the water comes in, you know, then you look at, well, how come I have orange staining? Well, you know, that's when we'll come out and do a test. And then we set up equipment that works within the well's parameters, okay? And so what that means is that we use a filter media that's light, that can remove the hardness, that can remove the iron, but also function properly within well water, because well water doesn't always have the same production rate or pressure as city water does.
Okay.
So those are the kind of issues that we focus on. So, you know, there's other companies out there, old school filter medias, that, you know, a water filtration media can be pretty heavy, right? You have green sand or berm is a type of filter media used for, you know, iron in the water. And it's, you know, 50 to 75 pounds per cubic foot. So that's pretty heavy. So a water filtration control valve is not a pump, so it doesn't generate pressure. It sends water through a smaller hole to create the pressure. And in those kind of situations, when you have a single tank filtration system, what kind of water are they using to try to flush themselves or clean themselves with, right? Okay. The same dirty water, right? So that process in itself is flawed. So we like to come out and offer a different kind of solution. You know, we like putting on a dual tank water softener. Resin is designed to take hardness out. Resin is designed to take out, you know, ferrous iron or clear water iron. It's light, it lifts during backwash, and when you have two tank system, you can take clean water from one tank to back flush the other. So now you're cutting down on water usage.
Gotcha.
And then you're cutting down on the cleaner, which is water softening salt, because you're using clean water to rinse the filter media, so you're more effective. And then it eliminates long-term, you know, media replacement cost.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned from the realtor side. Let me ask you this. If someone, looking at a house with a well, and they just go, hey, look, they're the realtor. I want water pros to come out and do all this testing for me. I mean, so that's something that you guys can come out
and
do that initial testing.
Absolutely, yeah. And then what we also do is we facilitate testing through the state lab. So if they have like a government-sponsored loan, a GI Bill, right, they want to use, or, you know, an FHA loan, and then we can facilitate to meet, because the government-sponsored loans require a water test. Not all of them, but majority of them require water tests that make sure the water is, you know, potable, is drinkable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we can help with that too. We use the state because the state's a third party. They're not interested in selling filtration equipment, right?
Sure.
So, I think it's unethical if you come into a company that tries to use a lab or say they have a lab or goes out and outsources it to a third party lab but puts it on their letterhead and then tries to use that to sell, you know, water filtration. It's almost like scaring people into it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a fine line there.
Right. So is well water, for what most of your clients tell you, I mean, most of them say, man, it tastes a lot better than city water, or sometimes you just get different aftertaste with it?
Well, it's a mixed bag of nuts. For example, there's well water in Colorado that has high sodium content that, you know, it's not good to drink. It's not, you can't grow anything with it. So we also, you know, those systems, we're designing whole house reverse osmosis units that can eliminate the high, you know, you got high sulfate content. There's so many issues in well water.
Wow.
So in unique cases, a whole house RO is needed because, you know, there's limitations in what a water filtration, water softening system can do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another issue that can occur, and it's called high TDS or high total dissolved solids. And there's a case where we were looking at a water report where the EPA says anything that's over 500 on the total dissolved solids level is not safe to drink. The EPA also states that on their website, if you're on well water, you're on your own, right? So we saw one where the total dissolved solids number, TDS, was, you know, over 5,000. So that's a lot. And the sodium content was, you know, close to 1,500. So there's a different level between human consumption and livestock consumption.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
So livestock, cattle can handle, you know, 4,000 on up, you know, that's okay with them, horses.
Yeah.
You know, certain poultry, it's a little bit different. So, you know, the university, Colorado State University Agriculture Department, mm-hmm. you can contact them. They have a veterinarian service, and they can provide you documentation if you're concerned about, you know, my water sodium levels and what livestock can handle. And the publications they use, believe it or not, all come from Canada. So there, you know, there hasn't been a university here in the States that's really done an in-depth study. But, you know, Canada, you know, they've done research and come up with, you know, supporting levels. And, you know, millions of years ago, you know, we had water here in Colorado, right? And so that's why they got the Great Salt Lake in Utah. And so what's happened is that some wells, and because I think also because of the drought, you know, the high sodium content is an issue. And so, you know, it's called SARS, sodium absorption ratio. That's what the number that is going to talk about vegetation, plant growth. But that has nothing to do with human consumption. And so people, you know, don't want to get that mixed up because they're looking at it thinking, oh, gosh, is this dangerous for me? Well, It's really not. It may not taste good, but it doesn't mean it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you have to look at, you know, what the total dissolved solid number is, and that's all the dissolved solids in the water, because of point-of-use reverse osmosis system. Now, this is completely different. This is the one that goes underneath the sink, point-of-use. They're limited on how much TDS they can handle.
Okay.
And so they're normally good to, you know, a decent one can handle up to 1,500 to 2,000 total dissolved solids, but then that affects their production rate. When you get above that, that's when you really need to think about the whole house reverse osmosis system, because, you know, the point of use just isn't designed to handle a higher volume of TDS. Their sweet spot is, you know, between 500 to 700 total dissolved solids. And I know this is really technical.
No, but yeah, it's good education for us. Yeah.
But you know, the TDS number can also, you know, makes up everything. It can be sodium in the water, can be the hardness in the water, can be the iron in the water, can be the sulfate in the water. You know, there's just lead in the water. I mean, there's just a lot of factors. So if you go into the state of Colorado and for about $250, they'll test, you know, for pretty much everything on well water, and then we can help you interpret what those readings mean. But I think it's a good idea. And I do think, again, because of the drought that we've had, and hopefully we'll get more rain this summer, mm-hmm. but I think, you know, the quality of water is definitely affected by that too.
Sure. Now, as far, you know, most of us, we don't call a plumber or someone like yourself till something's broken or not working. Are there things as far as from a maintenance side, if you say, hey, if you have well water, you should have us come out every what to just maintain so you don't run into those big, high, expensive problems?
So our appliances are not designed for super hard water anymore, right? They don't make well water appliances. Right, the city water appliances, meaning the wash machine and dishwasher, are just the same, you know, live in town or out in the country. So when you think about upgrading, you should really ask to see the warranty, because the warranty will spell out the water conditions. Okay. And so people don't think about that. What's the hardness range of operation? Do you guys remember about 7 years ago when they were talking about doing away with hot water heaters?
Mm-hmm.
Right, they wanted everybody to go to those InstaHot machines, which was not practical, but that's what they were going.
Right.
Well, then they came up with rules to make
a plan. Now, is that the tankless water heater?
Yeah, they want everybody to go with tankless hot water heaters. Yeah. So now, well, they came up with regulations that made the appliances use less water. So if you use less water, right, and then try to, you know, basically the pump aren't as big, right, in the water, and they want to cut down on water usage, so you're sending less amount of water through smaller holes to create the pressure. Well, that's when hard water and problem water can really affect them.
Okay.
And that's when we talked about, you know, doing the washcloth test. You know, take, if you don't have a water softener at home, you take bottled water, which is soft water, and, you know, rinse the clean washcloth to see all the trap soap that's there, right? And that kind of gives you an idea. And the other thing that people, you know, can also do is pull the lid off the back of the holding tank of the toilet, and that'll show you exactly what's going on.
And should be clear.
Right. And, you know, it can be orange and black and stain. And hard water, calcium carbonate, you know, it traps everything, and it just builds upon layers. And so well water can taste bad and smell bad because you can have sulfur, you can have iron content. People get a lot of iron buildup, and it gets trapped in the aerators, and so they think they have sulfur or H2S, and it's really the iron content.
Wow, very interesting. It's Water Pros, 303-862-5554, waterpros.net. Paul Dowding is our guest. We'll take a quick break and be back with more right after this.
Hi, this is Chris Kane with 303roofer.com. If you're looking to put on a new roof because of hail, give us a call at 303-390-1382. We'll give you a cash price, which means you'll most likely get to keep some of your insurance money instead of giving it to us. It's your money, we know that, and we'll price the work accordingly. So give us a call today, 303-390-1382, or go to our website, 303roofer.com.
For years now, you've heard me talk about Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center. Hey, this is Scott Watley, and yes, for almost 20 years, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center has been taking care of our pets. From medical, grooming, boarding, and even training, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center is your one stop for all of your pet's needs. Not only is their facility state-of-the-art, but now you can download the free Lone Tree Vet app and visit their online store for your pet products and pharmacy needs. You can also have your very own pet portal. Plus, don't forget to read their blogs at LoneTreeVet.com. Do you take your dog on hikes? Check out Hiking the Trail Safely with Your Dog. At Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, they believe all pets deserve to have a good life. Call today, 303-708-8050, or check them out, LoneTreeVet.com.
Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, today at 3. Now back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. Again, if you're just joining us, Paul Dowding is our guest. It's Water Pros, 303-862-5554. And they do handle about everything to do with water. And we'll touch on just kind of give you a bird's eye view of all they do. But we are kind of talking about well water today. So what do you find a lot of differences, say, you know, in the Castle Rock area to the plains out east? I mean, different issues, different problems?
Yeah, I always say Colorado water quality is a mixed bag of nuts. I mean, for example, Louisville, naturally soft water, right? It's just beautiful, naturally soft, and it's just gorgeous. Parts of Denver, you know, naturally, you know, almost naturally soft at 3 grains. You really don't need to worry about 3-grain water. I mean, it's, you know, easy. Then there's other parts where it gets really hard, 7, 9, 10, 15. Highlands Ranch has 3 different hardness areas. You know, that community out there.
Yeah, well, ours. Well, I know. I'm going to get you out because I'm sure I know our water is very hard. Now, when you say grains, and again, I realize it's technical, but what does that really mean?
So the measurement grains per gallon is solely for the purpose of water softening. It's a measurement used to make the right recommendation on size of the system, and then, you know, you set it based on the hardness level, so it determines how many gallons of water the system can clean before it needs to clean itself.
Okay.
So grains per gallon of hardness. So on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being really hard water where you see that instant calcification, you know, the majority of the metro area average, I think, is about a 9. You know, so you have communities, wow, you know, that can be 7 to 9. And then where you live, you know, that's over 10, mm-hmm, right? So, you know, that's what, you know, grains per gallon measurement are. A lot of testing companies measure water in what's called milligrams per liter, which is the same as parts per million. So you have to convert that to a grain per gallon, and you divide that by a factor of 17.1. And so some companies, some of our competitors, use that part per million or milligram per liter number because it's higher, right? So they think if I show them 250, it's like, wow, that's really hard water. But, you know, and that's just by their choice. But, you know, mm-hmm, we use the grain per gallon measurement because, and I always tell people, you don't need to have a high number to have hard water.
Wow. Interesting. All right. Circling back, anything else on the well side you want to touch on?
Yeah, I think, you know, last thing, you know, is I think if you're on a well, you should probably get your water tested every 2 years.
Okay.
You know, I think, you know, take it to the state and you know, spend the money to get it tested because, again, it's your responsibility. You don't have an outside third-party agency, you know, that's going to monitor it for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nitrates are something that you really, you know, are harmful, and I see those a little bit up north, you know, northeast of, you know, Fort Collins, you know, and there's a lot of dairy farms out there. And
sure.
So nitrates can be an issue. And you know, you have, you know, homes there and farms there that are no longer there and that used wells, and back in the day they didn't have you know, the policy that you know, mm-hmm, we do today to cap a well properly, so you can get, you know, contamination, you know, and so it's a good idea to always monitor your water from, you know, for just a safety standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's switch over to residential real quick, and a few minutes left here, but let's talk about just a regular call where people are coming out. I mean, are they calling you saying, hey, I think I got hard water. I know I got hard water. What are the calls? And when you answer the phone, people are asking you.
Yeah, anybody, they call us. They know they have hard water. They see the evidence build up on, you know, on the faucets, the shower heads, the shower, mm-hmm, door. And they see it mainly in the dishwasher, so they want to save their appliances. And so we come out, and that's when we do the water test. The water test basically shows them how hard the water is, but it also shows them how we set up and make the right system recommendation for them.
Okay. Once again, it's Water Pros, 303-862-5554, and it's waterpros.net. And what's kind of your main service area?
The Denver metro area.
Okay.
So, you know, we like to, you know, I'd like to, you know, your listening audience.
Sure.
You know, is okay. Where we
now
like
we
to
go. Now, we go up to Casper, Wyoming, man.
Well, we'll go to Fort Collins.
For a road trip.
We'll go to Fort Collins, you know, and we'll go up to Fort Collins and Loveland, and we'll go down to Colorado Springs, you know. And I like to stay out of the, you know, we'll go up to Evergreen, but, you know, not, you know, it just doesn't, it's not practical for us to go deeper and,
sure,
you know, to the
mountains.
No,
no, yeah, 100%.
You know, and we'll go out east to help out, you know, parts of Fort Lupton. I mean, that's a big town.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so,
that's,
you know,
really
right. You know, we'll go east I-70, I-76.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you know, the last thing is, you know, water treatment isn't plug and play. And so the last thing I want to say, too, is make sure if you're buying filters or filter replacements, they're made here in North America. I just don't trust anything coming from Asia only because of the quality control. And your drinking water and drinking water filters are something you really should really pay attention to. Yeah. You don't want to take chance in any possible contamination or anything if you can't trust where they're made from. And so a lot of companies, you know, go for the cheaper aspect of, you know, purchasing, especially, you know, probably in today's economy. So I definitely recommend you make sure they're made here in North America.
Yeah. And I would assume pretty vast difference. Our current water soft, I mean, probably 22, 23 years old. So I'm sure there's a lot of difference in what was being made then to what's being made now.
And one thing you got to consider, too, is that, you know, when you get a system that old, fiberglass tanks don't last forever. Right, so the fiberglass tank has been under your city water pressure for how long, and so that, you know, they get to point, the resin in a water softener has a general lifespan of 10 years, and when your system was installed, they were using straight chlorine, not a chloramine. So now they've added ammonia to the chlorine mixture. And then, you know, pay attention in on news reports, because, you know, what, it was a couple months ago, Inglewood had E. coli outbreak in their water.
Yeah.
Right, and so in my home, I added an ultraviolet light filtration system to my whole house water after my water softener, just because of bacteria and viruses, right? You know, I've got young kids at home living with me, and
So what does that show you then when you turn the water on?
Well, what's going on is a UV light zaps and kills bacteria and viruses. Done. So if anything, you know, if anything happens for the municipality where they have a bacteria outbreak, I know that the ultraviolet light is going to kill the bug. It doesn't eliminate the bug. I mean, you got a dead bug in the water, but it's not going to hurt you, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
In addition, yeah. So, yeah, and so you think about that you got the working water, the water that you wash and bathe in, and then you got that 1% for cooking and for drinking. So I use the ultraviolet light with reverse osmosis, and so I know that no matter what, you know, we're going to have good water.
Right. I don't know if this had a fair question, but as far as what's an average home? I mean, what's your average? Somebody wants to get a water softener put in their house. I mean, what are we looking at, ballpark?
$2,195 installed as our base
ballpark.
Water
softener. Oh, that's pretty good.
$2,195. $2,195. And we do offer discounts. You know, if the plumbing's easy, we're fair, right? If we can put it in, then we'll offer discounts. And so we're at $2,195. Our reverse osmosis drinking water filter systems are $900 installed. That's the point of use underneath the kitchen sink. Okay. And so if you have a well water where we know we have a dual tank, you know, situation, or dual tank water softeners are, you know, a little bit more expensive. And so we like to basically design well water systems to the water and let the water tell us what's going on. So it's hard to give a number there.
No, I get it. Yeah.
Because you just don't know. But, you know, everyday water softening, if you live in town, $21.95.
Okay, man, great deal. It is waterpros.net, 303-862-5554. Again, 303-862-5554. When you call, mention Haystack Help.
Yeah, if they mention Haystack Help, we'll give them $200 off.
All right. So we appreciate that.
Mention that, $200 off.
Quickest $200 you've saved today, all right? 303-862-5554, and it's waterpros.net. And again, we're going to Paul will be on quite a bit with us here, and so we're going to be covering all the things you ever needed to know and wanted to know about water. But if you've got any kind of system problem right now, water filtration. I hope you'll give Paul a call. Give him a chance to earn your trust in your business. Once again, the number 303-862-5554. Paul, we appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Man, we are thrilled about our partnership with you, and I got to get on your schedule and get you out to our house and see what we can get figured out there.
We'll take good care of you.
I know you will, sir. Thank you very much. You're listening to Haystack Help Radio. We'll take a quick break and be back with more right after this.
Want to keep making your 30-year payment but own in 15 years? Want to be able to access your equity for future needs and not pay for it now? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. We have been showing Coloradans how to own their home in less time without changing their 30-year payment. Home values are at the highest in their history. Take advantage of being able to access your equity for 10, 20, 30 years without making payments now. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. Worried about inflation? Everything getting too expensive? Learn how to be able to access your equity without having to refinance and pay closing costs over and over and over. Do it once, and you're good for 30 years. Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Tired of paying too much interest to own your home? Stop! Learn how to lower your total interest cost, 720-895-0500. Locally owned and operated since 2001, and where it's all about you is not just our motto, it's who we are. NMLS 298191, regulated by DORA.
Only an experienced trial attorney like Kevin Flash truly understands the fair value of a personal injury case because he knows how juries make decisions. You and your insurance company determine the value of your case differently. Your insurance company enters keywords into a computer program to generate a dollar amount, probably leaning toward the lower end because they have an allegiance to their stockholders. You have a more emotional view of the value because you recognize the total impact of your injuries beyond economic damages. Kevin Flesh knows the truth. In our legal system, only a jury determines fair value. Unlike most personal injury attorneys who rarely bring cases to trial, Kevin Flesh spends nearly every day in court. He knows how a jury would likely react in your case, so he knows how to estimate fair value. There will always be a difference of opinion between you and your insurance company. Learn the truth from Kevin Flesh. Call 303-806-8886.
Have you been thinking about a new pair of glasses? Maybe some prescription sunglasses? Well, look no further than Stack Optical. Since 1968, yes, you heard me right. Since 1968, Stack Optical has been providing the most comprehensive quality ocular care for their patients. This family-owned business is proud to be one of the few optical offices that has their own on-site eyeglass production and eyeglass repair studio. Stack Optical, located at 2233 South Monaco Parkway, features the most extensive lines of eyeglass frames, sunglasses, and contact lenses to ensure that you love your appearance and experience superior comfort. Our comprehensive eye exams proactively diagnose eye conditions and diseases while providing the most accurate vision care. We welcome you to experience a lifetime of superior ocular care from doctors that are devoted to your eye health. Call now for your $69 eye exam, 303-321-1578. At Stack Optical, you'll see the difference.
Hey, Dan, you know, our jobs are pretty different. I'm a baseball announcer, you're an attorney and a talk show host.
Yeah, but we do have something in common.
Really? What's that?
Our favorite car dealer, Len Lyle Chevrolet.
Yeah, definitely not your typical dealership.
That's so true, Jack. No high-pressure sales tactics. They respect your time. And when you have two jobs, that's important.
You know, I'd recommend Len Lyle Chevrolet to anyone. And with their low overhead, that means
lower prices. Yeah, we really do have something in common.
Len Lyle Chevrolet. Go east and pay the least. Chevy, find new roads.
Now's the time to get into the Outdoorsman's Attic. Their summer sale is in full swing. All fishing gear 10 to 50% off. Tents, sleeping bags, and packs save 30%. 30% off all knives, Sitka clothing, 25% off. And if you're in the market for a gun safe, stop by the Outdoorsman's Attic. It's Colorado's largest outdoor consignment store, located at 2650 West Hamden in Sheridan. They've also got live bait, and if you haven't picked up your Colorado fishing or hunting licenses yet, they can help you there as well. If your firearm needs some work, head downstairs and see Scott the gunsmith. If you've got some hunting, fishing, and camping gear you're just not using anymore, stop by and see Billy, and he will explain their consignment program and how you can turn that gear into cash. Outdoor gear, guns, and ammo, all at the Outdoorsman's Attic, 2650 West Hamden in Sheridan.
Zip around the neighborhood, commute to work, or ride the trails on an e-bike. Hi, I'm Randy Carancy, founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are electric bikes that are fun and easy to ride. Pedal Assist technology flattens the steepest hills. At eBike of Colorado, we have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Just try it. Take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
You're listening to KLZ 560 AM, your home station.
Hey, this is Gregory Bloom. Welcome to Food Chat. Food Chat is about all things food, including growing food, harvesting food, processing food, and the culinary arts side of food. And this summer, we'll be talking to farmers, ranchers, some food processors, chefs, and restaurant owners. We'll be on every Wednesday at 12:30. So join us for your lunch hour, or you can listen to any of our past shows by going to GregoryBloom.com and clicking on the podcast radio show tab there. You can also send questions there too. So Food Chat is about reconnecting you to food. I'm Gregory Bloom. I'm your host. I grew up on a farm outside of Brighton, Colorado. I've spent my entire career, 31 years now, in the food business, working in six different USDA inspected food plants. And if you missed any of the first two shows, which we did, which were aired last week and the previous week, here at 12:30 on Wednesdays, you can find them at GregoryBloom.com. Our first show was about myths in food production, like label claims on the label that you see in the store that are confusing, like product of USA, no hormone claims, and a few others. And then last week's show, I interviewed John Jaramillo from the Colorado Hispanic Restaurant Association, which is new. It's about a year old. And also, by the way, after that interview, 52 Magazine entered published a great piece, a write-up on the Hispanic Restaurant Association. You can go to 5280.com and type in Hispanic Chef in the search box and find a great write-up on what they're doing with the Hispanic Chef Association here in Colorado. So next week, I'll have a great guest on, a local top chef. We'll be talking about the food scene this summer in Colorado, food events, food bazaars, some fun things you can plan on for your summer, for going to some food events and tasting some great Colorado local food. Hey, but today I have my friend Michael Hiracata on the show to talk about what he does, and I'm going to introduce Michael. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Michael, tell us about you and your family and how you got into farming, your family, and how long you've been farming, a little bit about your operation.
My name is Michael Hiracata, and I am a fourth-generation farmer. We grow, we've been growing produce and farming here in the Rocky Ford area for about 105 years or so. My family immigrated here from Japan, and they found this area to be very, I guess, friendly to Japanese people, so they rented the ground and they started farming a century ago. And then, you know, they passed that on to my uncles and my dad, and they eventually passed that on to me and my cousin. And we're passing it all along to our sons and daughters, and hopefully they'll keep it going and last another 100 years.
That'd be great. Yeah, that'd be good. I'm going to ask you a question about the sustainability of that your farm at the end here. But I've been to your farm a couple times. For people listening that don't know where Michael's farm is, it's in the southeastern part of Colorado along the Arkansas River near the La Junta Lamar area. Am I saying that right, Michael?
Yeah, La Junta Lamar, southeast, about 60 miles southeast of Pueblo.
60 miles southeast of Pueblo. So if I remember right, it's about an hour drive east from Pueblo. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a great... Why is that area a good area for growing melons?
You know, it's it's the combination of the heat of the day and the cool of the night. We're getting, right now, we're getting about a 30-degree swing in temperature from, you know, mid-90s to the mid-60s. So that kind of forces the fruit to pull in more sugar.
Ah, that's good to know.
And something to do with the soil and then the water and you know, but a lot, and the altitude, too. A lot has to do with the altitude, Colorado's altitude. Most fruit grown in the United States is better from Colorado. Take the, you know, the peaches, the cherries, and the vegetables too, like the sweet corn. Everything is better in Colorado, but I'm extremely biased.
Yeah, well, that's okay. You have the right to be. tell us about what have you planted so far this spring, and what do you have left to plant, and what are you growing this year?
We've planted cantaloupe, watermelons, and some pumpkins. Honeydew, and some organic cantaloupe and organic watermelons. We're finishing up planting some a little bit of cantaloupe now, but we still have quite a bit of pumpkins to go.
Okay, so you plant the pumpkins at last after the melons, typically?
Yes, yeah. Well, we start pretty early with the pumpkins, too, because, you know, every year it seems like the pumpkins, they start pulling them a little bit sooner, so... We plant earlier every year. We usually ship pumpkins about the end of August.
End of August for the pumpkins, yeah. Okay. It gives the stores plenty of time to get them into distribution before Halloween, which is when they're sold. I've been down there for a planting a few years ago, Michael. Now, for people who haven't been to a melon operation before, they might not understand that these aren't planted on pivots. Pivots are the, for people that know what a pivot is, that's what we call a circle. When you're flying in the airplane, you see all the circles in the ground. Those are pivots. Michael, you're not growing on pivots, are you?
No, we grow all of our produce either on flood irrigation, which is the rows down the field, or drip irrigation. That's how we grow all of our cantaloupe and watermelon. All of our produce is grown on that because it's a lot more efficient. And you're more efficient with your time, and you save on the water, or I don't know if you save on the water, but your timing on the water is better, and our yields have gone up. And we also use a plastic mulch to cut down on the pesticide and herbicide use, and the weed pressure, and to also conserve the water because it's covered the row, and it doesn't let anything evaporate.
Yeah, if I remember right, your tractor, as I was kind of filming behind the tractor, it's laying down this, what is that, about 6 foot wide mulch barrier underneath, and underneath it's the seeds, of course, and then the drip irrigation's in the soil. Do I remember that right?
Yes, it's about 54 inches, and, you know, the tractors, we use GPS, so everything is straight, and less diesel fuel, less wear on the tire, less time in the field.
Okay. And then tell us about, like, at harvest time, what happens. And I'll bring you back on at harvest time if you're not too busy. When you might be too busy at harvest time to talk to me, but tell us, kind of walk us through what's going to come to, what's going to be ready first, and how do you harvest it? What's the process?
Okay, I think right now it looks like the cantaloupe and watermelon, the seedless watermelon or seeded watermelon will be ready first. But what will happen is we'll move, on the cantaloupe, we'll move some a machine to the field like a conveyor belt, and we'll look for the ripe cantaloupe, which we always pick completely ripe. Everything we pick is ripe, so you don't have to let it sit when you buy it. You don't have to let it sit at home; it's just ready to eat. So we'll move that to the field and with trailers, and then we will pick it out of the field and take the cantaloupe after the trailer is full to our processing plant, where we will give the cantaloupes a shower with some antibacterial and some melon soap, and then we will pack them in a carton and then cool them down to about 38 degrees.
Okay, you have to cool them down. Yeah, I've seen that too. I've seen your packing shed where you have this wash system, and then they go into pack off, and then they go into these cold rooms. I've seen that. Yeah. You know, one thing that you taught me that I've used a ton since my visit down there that I think people would be interested in hearing your thoughts again. But share with us how to know when you're in the store if you're getting a good melon. And we'll talk more about how to find out if it's your melon versus another melon. But how do you know if a cantaloupe or a watermelon is ready? Are any of them in the bin fine to just grab and go home? But how would you know if a melon's ready?
Like a cantaloupe, it's a little bit different because people like some cantaloupe that are a little bit on the greener side,
mm-hmm.
And some like it a little bit on the riper side. So if you like it on the greener side, just make sure the outside is very firm to touch, and not soft. But you always want to make sure it's got a straw color to it, or an orange. We always say orange, but it's more of a straw color. And if you like it a little bit more ripe, make sure it's a little soft and has a little bit of a sweet smell to it, or a fruity smell to it. And that'll the meat inside will be a little bit softer.
Yeah, I push around the stem. I find the stem end, and which is easy to identify, and I kind of push on it. And if it gives a little bit, then that's the kind I like, is a little bit softer. And if it doesn't give at all, if it's just really hard, I know that's not ready. And then I'll smell the stem, and I can smell a sweet. I can smell the melon, basically, right?
Yeah, you can smell, especially melons from Rocky Fork.
Yeah, they have a nice sweet.
They're very pungent, and they'll have a nice sweet smell to them.
Okay, and then what about a watermelon? I use the thump, thump, thump. I try to listen for the hollow sound. But tell us about what your thoughts are on that.
That's kind of what we use, and it's like a deep thump that will resonate through the whole watermelon. You don't want a flat thump. I hope I'm explaining it right, but if it's flat and it doesn't vibrate through the whole watermelon, it's overripe, or
right.
It has a hollow. So what we look for is a deep, deep thump, and it resonates through the whole watermelon. And also in the field, when we pick it, there's a little curly cue on there, and if it's brown, we pick it.
I see.
So the guys in the field, they're kind of experts, and they know what to pick. They are experts.
So when they go through the fields, they're not just picking every single melon at that time. They're just picking what's ripe, correct?
Right. Yes. On the cantaloupes, we pick probably we have about 10 to 14 pickings, and the watermelons, we have about five pickings or so, somewhere around there.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of times through the field. And then you have people, like, on the ground doing that. It's not mechanical, right? It's actually people looking to see if the melon's ripe and putting it on the conveyor?
It's very labor-intensive.
You know, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I just want to go back to, if you're looking for that perfectly ripe watermelon, whether it's a Hiracata melon or if it's before the season, those are in the stores, then you just, you know, tap on those watermelons, and I listen for the lowest tone, the more, like Michael's explaining, the lowest kind of deep tone, and you can hear it kind of reverberate throughout the whole watermelon. If it's kind of a flat tone or a high tone, then I go to the next one. Is that a good way to explain it?
Yes, and then, you know, look at the outside, too. If it has a good green color to it, and it's not yellow or whitish, it should be a pretty good watermelon.
What about sometimes on the melons, they look great, like most of the melon looks beautiful, but they'll have a white spot on the bottom. That's just where they touch the ground, right?
Yeah, that's where it sits.
And that melon might be fine, even though if it's got the white spot on it, right?
Yes, most of the watermelons do have a white spot on the belly of it, because that's where it sits, and it just doesn't get the sun, and it, you know, maybe the dirt or something rubbed against it when it was a little, and it rocked it back and forth with the wind.
Okay. Yeah, right. So yeah, people are just listening. If you don't have to put back a watermelon, if it sounds good, has that nice deep tone that resonates throughout the whole melon, but it's got a, you know, 6-inch white spot on the bottom. That's still good. But I know it's no fun when you take a watermelon home and you're going to have a picnic, or you've got your kids and your grandkids over and you're going to cut into a watermelon and you're like, oh man, it's overripe, it's soft and it's spoiled, or it's just not ready yet. Usually it happens with the watermelon, in my case, my experience is it's mostly that they're overripe, not underripe. So tell us some. I know people can go to your website, Michael, which is HiracuttaFarms.com, and you have a list there of where people can find your melons when they come into season in the Colorado stores. But why don't you go ahead and tell us where we can find your melons this fall?
Okay. We ship to King Soopers, City Market, Safeway, Whole Foods. Walmart, Target. I think Trader Joe's. We ship to all the major retailers in Colorado, and it's most of our cantaloupe stay and watermelon stay on the Front Range because the population has grown quite a bit, and there's a huge demand for our product here in Colorado.
How do people know, like, if they're looking for one of your watermelons versus an imported one? When I say imported one, I mean no disrespect, because right now there's watermelons in the stores, and obviously they're not from this area because it's not harvest time yet. They're all from Mexico. Some of those watermelons are great. I've had good ones. I've had bad ones. But how do people know if they're getting a Hiracutta Farms melon when they're shopping in this fall?
There'll be a sticker on there that says grown in Rocky Ford, Colorado, Hiracutta Farms.
Okay. So look for the sticker on each melon.
Look for the sticker on each melon, and the same way with the cantaloupe. And our cantaloupes do look a little bit different. They're not the perfect Western shipper. We grow an Eastern shipper, so they're not the perfect melon on the outside, but they're way better inside. Distinct look to them.
Do you mean they look a little funny, or they look a little different than a conventional cantaloupe, or what do you mean?
Yeah, they have sutures, you know, like the ribs.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're not the smooth, perfectly round cantaloupe. They're a little oblong, and they have the sutures in it. And it's kind of unique to, on this side of the United States, we're one of the only few people that grow this variety of cantaloupe.
Okay, I've seen that. I know what you're talking about. They're not perfectly round, and they do have that kind of stitch, suture kind of webbing look to them. Yeah, it's very easy to identify.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about farming in general. We've talked about what you grow, but farming in general in that part of Colorado, what are you seeing over the last, you know, decade? What kind of changes have you seen in the farming community down there? Are they making it? Are people that have been farming for generations like your farm, are they able to keep going, or are some farms folding, or what's kind of the scene down there?
You know, the farmers are definitely getting older. I'm 52, and I'm probably one of the younger farmers, I'd say one of the younger farmers, but there's a couple families with their kids that are coming up that with a few younger kids, and it's very hard. Our water situation isn't perfect. Every year it seems like we're in a drought, or we have too much water, or we have too much water and a drought in the same 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's very challenging with the water, the water situation, with the snowpack, and how the weather is hitting us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine. This is a good time for me to talk about our sponsor. Our sponsor today is RanchFreshMeats.com. You cannot buy a watermelon at RanchFreshMeats.com because they only sell products that are frozen, specifically meats. Family-owned company. My family owns RanchFreshMeats.com, and we bring to you the best quality meats from farms, ranches, and food plants that we vetted out as being the best in the industry for quality and food safety and how they treat their animals. You know, Father's Day is Sunday, so if you haven't got a Father's Day present yet, or you just want to get your dad or granddad a fun gift for this summer, to give them to grill, we've got some cool steaks, bison tomahawks, Wagyu tomahawks. You can buy just two at a time. You don't have to buy a whole case. And a tomahawk is a bone-in ribeye. So if your dad or granddad likes ribeyes, they would like a tomahawk, and a bison tomahawk and a Wagyu tomahawk is very distinctive flavors. And hey, if you don't want to go out and spend 2 or 3 hours at a restaurant because you're waiting for an hour for a table and then it takes you a while to eat, if you'd rather just have a kind of a chilled, more casual, relaxed atmosphere at home and spend about half or maybe a third as much on that same restaurant quality steak, remember ranchfreshmeats.com. We've got some other steaks there, some certified Angus beef, Colorado high choice ribeyes, strips, tenderloins, whatever is the most favorite steak of your dad. So let's go back to Michael. Michael, how do the prices of melons that come into this state, like from different states like Arizona, California, and even the Mexican ones, are those competitive? Like, do they push your prices down when your melons are ready? Can you kind of get what you want, the market price you need for your melons to make it sustainable, or do you have to compete with those imported melons?
We do get a premium for our product, but they all, you know, it's always that price is used against us. And they do bring in some cantaloupe from California while we're in season. We want everybody to be 100% local, but sometimes they aren't, and it does affect how much volume we ship out. Because they can produce it cheap. You know, they have better weather. Colorado, like I was talking before, has extremely, it's crazy weather. I mean, you know, you can have snow one day, just like this last storm, you know, 6 inches of snow, and then it's gone the next day.
Right.
So our yields are not as good as California or Arizona or Mexico because of our change in weather. Extreme weather we have here, but that's also what makes our fruit sweeter is that extreme weather, the heat and the cool. You know, we don't have perfect conditions, and that's what makes our melon better. But you know, we can't compete with 2,000 boxes an acre when we're getting maybe 800 boxes an acre, and our costs keep going up with diesel fuel and fertilizer.
So are you kind of able, with all these big retailers you sell, are you able to kind of like, hey, here's what I need to make a small profit based on my inputs this year and the yield of my crops. This is what I need. And they're like, okay, we get it. We want to say, make sure you're sustainable and that you guys are viable. Or do they say, well, you know, Michael, that price is just a tad high right now because we can get them from California or from somewhere else cheaper. Do they have that kind of conversation with you?
Yeah, they have. They're both ways. I mean, they want us to be sustainable, and you know, but then again, they do use that against us sometimes. It's, I mean, for the most part, the retailers are very loyal to our product, and but you know, it's hard for, you know, for us here when we only have one season, in California and Mexico, you know, they have, you know, maybe two to three plantings a year. It doesn't freeze, and they can grow in the wintertime.
Right.
And it's hard to make them see it our way. You know, it's kind of like we've got a premium product. People want to pay less for it because it's in the summertime. You know, it's in season, but in the wintertime, you pay a lot more for a subpar product.
Yeah, like right now, the product right now is expensive and it's subpar compared to the fall crop that you'll have. So everyone listening, you know, one thing you can do to help a local family farm is when you're going into the stores, wherever you do your shopping this fall, and you're buying Hiracata Farms melons, hey, go talk to the produce manager or the general manager of the store just on your way out and say, hey, I really appreciate you supporting a local family farm that grows local melons. You know, if that melon costs you 30 cents or 50 cents or even a buck more than that imported melon, then so be it. You know, a dollar isn't going to buy you even a third of a cup of coffee anymore. So just support a local farmer, you know. But I think it's important that we support the local farmers. And, you know, I always think, you know, you can't just like add up all your inputs, add up your labor, do your math for what you need for your gross profit to make a small profit and say, this is where we're going to market, because it doesn't always work that way, does it, Michael?
No, especially now, you know, with the way, you know, the COVID has hit, everything is kind of really up and down, and it's hard to gauge your pricing because you can have a huge, like last year we had a huge swing in freight cost right in the middle of the season, and we've never seen that before. Then the box shortage, carton shortage, pallet shortage, it kind of caught us by surprise, and it's something I've never seen before.
Yeah, and this year too, I tell people all the time in the food industry, you know, the price of fuel affects everything produced in the food industry, but it lags, so you might not see it. You know, we see it at the pump more immediately, like we're spending like $5 a gallon. National average for a gallon of gas right now nationwide is $4.99, so it's going to cost you $70, $80, $100 to fill up your car. Well, you might not see that in your food product until 2, 3, 4 months down the road, but you know, you need fuel to get the product to the market, you know, and you have to pay that fuel bill, and so we're going to have to pay for it in the product. What about your other input costs besides fuel, which we all see? Are you seeing your input costs go up this year for like fertilizer and the other inputs you have?
Yeah, fertilizer has more than doubled. Labor, I think, has gone up 20%, 15%. I can't remember. Box increases, you know, 30%. It's hard to get, you know, the tires for the tractors, they've gone up quite a bit, if you can even get them. Everything has just gone up across the board.
Yeah, it all adds up and it all takes out of your bottom line, and it makes it really hard to be viable. Now, what about, do you think that in, you know, can you pass what you guys have, you know, done for generations off to your next generation? Do you think it's viable in 10, 20, 30 years?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I don't know if it will be viable in 10 or 30 years, 10, 20, 30 years. It's everything is in flux so much. It's going to be hard for me to want my family to keep doing this. But that's all we've done. It's all we know. But you know, hopefully we can crunch numbers are good enough to get it to where we can make a profit.
Right.
Keep going.
Right. Well, we hope you can. Hey, Michael, thank you for joining us today here at Food Chat, and I'll look forward to talking to you this fall.
All right. Thank you, Greg.
Uh-huh. Take care. Hey, thanks for joining us today at Food Chat, reconnecting you to food, and I really appreciate your time, so come on back next week.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.